Good morning. This gospel is a thin slice of a large piece of meat that's gotten put together into one little sandwich. Largely because, well, increasingly because of the way we've rearranged the liturgical calendar. We always had the first 3 weeks of Easter were resurrection stories. And then the fourth Sunday was the Good Shepherd. And then fifth and sixth Sunday, you had readings from Jesus' discourse at the Last Supper. And then the seventh, you had a reading from the final prayer, chapter 17. And then Pentecost. But then a while back, the bishops decided to abolish Ascension Thursday and move it to Sunday. So, of course, the readings went with it to Sunday. Now, you could drop out John 17 and not ever read from that prayer. That doesn't sound like a good idea. So you move that reading back. And then that in turn means that the other two get pushed into one. There's only one reading and every year from this four chapters worth of account of the Last Supper in John. It starts with a little bit of narrative. This is the chapter from which you get the washing of the feet narrative, for instance. But before the end of chapter 13, it's already into more or less monologue. And 14, 15, and 16 all continue with that. There's a little bit of dialogue. You heard Judah, not the Iscariot, get a little one-liner in the middle of the reading today. You get a few of those sprinkled throughout. But primarily, it's Jesus talking for four chapters. And we read 10 verses of it. Well, it needs a little more attention than that. But how to give it that much attention is problematic. You can sit down and read the whole four chapters in one sitting. It won't take you very long. But frankly, while you need to do it at least once in a while just to keep the thread and continuity in your mind, doing that as a regular practice, sort of like sitting down with a box of chocolates and trying to do them in one sitting. You will be finished long before the chocolates are. This is not Western literature. This is not point A, point B, point C, building to a climax, and therefore, and conclusion. This is more mystical poetry. It starts out with a topic and sort of wanders, curls back on itself, and then makes another loop that is slightly different from the first. And by building these concentric circles, slowly changing in color, width, hue, what builds a design, a pattern. Well, we're not used to reading that kind of literature, and we get stumped. Wait a minute, didn't I just hear this? Well, no, not exactly, but almost. You know? Something very similar was said in the last pass of the circle, a few verses or a chapter ago. So after we've read the whole thing, you really need to sit down and take it little by little, chew on each part, and appreciate it. And it's worth doing. When you get into it, you see what the themes are that keep recurring as it circles round and round. One of them is very clear in this morning's reading, shows up already twice directly, and once or twice more alluded to, even in that short reading. And that's the notion of indwelling. That God dwells in Jesus, Jesus dwells in us. We dwell in Jesus. This takes a little step further than the sort of face-to-face relationship that we're accustomed to and is more of a mystical approach. Mystics gravitate to these chapters of John. If you take all the mystical readings in the history of the church, count up their scriptural references, you'll find more from these four or five chapters of John than probably the rest of the New Testament put together. Listen to what it says. Then you will realize that I am in my Father, and you are in me, and I in you. And a few chapters later, my Father will love them, a few verses later, my Father will love them, we will come to them and make our dwelling with them. This is not exactly Eastern, where the sort of boundary between one and another merges and everything flows together. This is still Western in the sense of that face-to-face thing is not totally lost. There is I and Jesus and God and you and so on, all dwelling in one another. But it's a much more global view, one where the barriers seem a little more permeable between us and Jesus and God. Now, that's not something that we're comfortable with, I don't think, or something that we experience very much. Our experience tends to run in the other direction. In fact, our experience tends to run, or at least my experience tends to run. I don't know about you. But if I'm awake, mostly I'm thinking of three things, two of which I'm already behind one. And I run from one end of the day to the other. Well, I lumber from one end of the day to the other, getting farther and farther behind. The idea of being still is something that doesn't fit into my world. But I need to make a place for it. And not if not all the time, at least once in a while, to get quiet. When you get quiet, you can see. Have you been swimming in our area someplace, you know, Ocean City, New Jersey, Virginia, up and down the Mid-Atlantic in the ocean? How far do you have to walk out before you can't see your feet anymore? Less than halfway up to your knees, right? Because all that sand stirred up in the water, you can't see much at all. You ever been down the islands? The Caribbean someplace? And you go out to the point where you have to tread water. You can't touch bottom. And you can still watch your little toe. The reef out there is picking up the waves and the sand. And the water is clear because the water is still. You can see all the way down. That's what Augustine meant when building on passages like this. The Father is in me and I am in you. He said, Lord, you are deeper in us than we are. Somewhere down below the bottom of your soul is where God is to be found. And yet normally I can't see more than about halfway down, if that much. Because my soul was like the Atlantic here, all stirred up by the waves, all full of the floating sand. I can't see very much. When I can get quiet, I mean really quiet, not just the phone's not ringing, although that's a good start, but really quiet, I can see a lot farther down. That's what this is about. It's an experience that's probably going to remain infrequent, perhaps become more infrequent in modern life as things go on. But an experience we need to allow ourselves, we need to create for ourselves at least once in a while, to remind ourselves of who we are. That we are in Jesus. That we are in God. That Christ is in us. That God is in us. Not in me uniquely, in you just as much, and in the next one just as much. People who get the feeling that God is in them run that risk too. They begin to think God is in me, and therefore I'm right, you know? And none of the rest of you sort of matter very much. Well, this is religious zealotry, which leads to some fairly nasty things. But true reflection on that means that if God is that deep in me, then God is that deep in everybody else. All of us carry within us the presence of Christ, the presence of God. We need, therefore, to learn to seek it out in ourselves and in each other. One way of stimulating that is to take passages like this, 13, 14, 15, 16, John, and use them for meditation. use them for prayer. Read a few verses, sit, think about them, pray about them, talk to God about them, and then get very, very still. And as the dust begins to settle in your soul, look down inside. And somewhere below the depths of your own being, you will find the presence of Christ and the presence of God. For that, sisters and brothers, let us pray.